Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, March 7th, 2024. Impacts unclear as Marfa ISD adopts controversial state-mandated school library policy. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa ISD school board members voted to approve a new school library policy this week relating to HB 900. A controversial bill signed into law this past legislative session aimed at preventing sexually explicit materials from entering Texas public school libraries and requiring parental consent for any sexually relevant materials. The Big Bend Sentinel was unable to obtain a copy of the new library policy that school board members approved, leaving it unclear if any immediate changes will be made to how the school library operates. The enforcement of the reader, restricting explicit and adult designated educational resources act, has been the subject of an ongoing lawsuit between several booksellers and the Texas Education Agency, TEA. Booksellers sued over the bill's requirement that they rate books for sexual content before selling them to schools, claiming the law was vague, impossible to enforce, and could harm business. On January 17, 2024, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that TEA cannot enforce the rating system for booksellers, siding with the sellers' claims HB 900 violates their First Amendment rights, meaning that part of the law is effectively moot. What local districts across the state are now required to comply with is the remaining part of the law involving school libraries' collection development policies and parental consent. While Alpine and Fort Davis ISDs await a policy update from the Texas Association of School Boards, TASB, coming this summer to review the issue, Marfa ISD proceeded with adopting its policy, called EFB Local Library Materials, this week. Alpine ISD Superintendent Michelle Reinhart said she is anticipating the EFB Local Library Materials policy being one of 10 to 12 policy updates TASB will present to school boards this summer. She said smaller districts without legal departments rely on TASB's guidance when adopting new policies in order to stay in compliance as the entity stays abreast of legislation and ongoing court cases. They'll do a lot of the legwork of understanding what the legislature means, working on how to translate that into the language of effective policy. That's one of the reasons that we contract with them, Reinhart said. Marfa ISD Interim Superintendent Arturo Alferez told school board members in a meeting on February 19th, when the library policy was first considered, that they could wait to adopt it along with the other TASB updates. In a meeting Monday, he explained again it would be a part of their routine upcoming legal updates, but several board members were under the impression the policy needed to be adopted now, and it was put up for a vote and passed. All districts will eventually be required to adopt a new local library policy. What is unclear is exactly how the broad new rules about excluding sexually relevant material from collections will be enforced locally at a time when Texas leads the nation in book bans And books often targeted by bans include texts on LGBTQ+ experiences, sexuality, and health. Shirley Robinson, executive director of the nonprofit Texas Library Association, said, for now, her agency is recommending school librarians stick to their existing collection development policies, which all public school districts already have in place. She said one of the main differences under HB 900 is the standardization of collection development language. The law seeks to prevent school libraries from carrying sexually explicit material, which it defines as any written, illustration, photographic, image, video, or audio material that describes, depicts, or portrays sexual conduct in a way that is patently offensive. Those collection development policies and selection guidelines were more generally based on locally accepted standards and meeting those community needs, Robinson said. Now everyone across the state of Texas will be subject to the same very broad collection development policies. Another change brought about by HB 900 is the requirement that parental consent be obtained if a student wishes to check out a book deemed sexually relevant. The sexually relevant rating would have been determined by vendors, but now that that part of the law was struck down, it is unclear who will be making those determinations, Robinson said. It should not be the librarian. It should not be the school board. It should not be the school administrator. Because of how subjective those definitions are, Robinson said, it could really open up all of those entities to a lot of risk and liability and would really end up spending a lot of taxpayer dollars on frivolous lawsuits. Robinson said, because the school library policy is vague, it opens up the floor for broad interpretations of content, and her agency is already seeing books being pulled off of shelves by self-censoring librarians and disagreements amongst districts about which books are appropriate for which students. I think that in trying to legislate, we're running into really complicated scenarios where one district's interpretation of sexually relevant might be something that is just completely benign and not even in that category to someone in another district, Robinson said. Two of the top 10 books to be challenged in 2022 included Gender Queer and Flamer, autobiographical texts about the LGBTQ experience, according to the American Library Association. While a provision of the law prohibits the removal of material based solely on the ideas contained in the material, personal background of the author, or characters in the material, Robinson said that's not what's going to happen on the ground. That language exists, but in practice, in reality, it's definitely a concern, Robinson said. Calls for book bans across the state have increased significantly since October 2021, said Robinson, when Texas lawmaker Matt Krauss released a list of 850 books, now coined the Krauss List, that he said could make students feel uncomfortable. She said efforts to remove books from school libraries are often led by small, politically motivated groups. Parents' involvement with their children's education and what they are reading is important and needs to continue, Robinson said. Libraries have long served them and help expand their worldview, she said, but decisions about what is acceptable for a young reader should be made on an individual basis. We can talk to our children and help them choose what is right or our family's beliefs, but we can't choose those same books for someone else's family, Robinson said. Marfa ISD librarian Crawford Margineau was not present for either of the board meetings in which the school board members discussed adopting the new library policies. In an email to the Big Bend Sentinel, Margineau said she and Interim Superintendent Alvarez had talked about whether the district's library included any controversial books. She said the past couple of years, Scholastic Incorporated, one of the district's book vendors that hosts book fairs, implemented an automatic pop-up message in its cash registers that halts a purchase to make sure an elementary student isn't purchasing a book with content more appropriate for high school students. But the feature wasn't really needed. My observation is that our staff quickly gets attuned to parents' wishes about which subjects are or are not appropriate for their children, Margineau said. Robinson said the new difficult-to-enforce school library policies under HB 900 only make things more complicated for public educators in the state of Texas, who already have a lot on their plates. Their jobs are immensely more difficult now in 2024 than they were even after the pandemic started, and by legislating and mandating these kinds of requirements and trying to navigate these different new laws, we're taking our focus off of serving the students of Texas, Robinson said. Photo by Hannah Gentiles. Blair Park, third from left, at a campaign event held at the Presidio Stockyards in January. On Tuesday night, Park was elected as the new Presidio County Attorney and will take over for incumbent Rod Ponton in 2025. Park beats Ponton by more than 2-1 margin in county attorney race. Presidio commissioner races head to runoffs. Arevalo wins tax office post. By Rob D'Amico. Rob at BigBendSentinel.com. Last week, county attorney Rod Ponton began running ads on Ojinaga Radio in Spanish proclaiming, "No más Marfa, no more Marfa," perhaps as a response to his challenger, Marfa attorney Blair Park, who had been running a stream of Spanish ads there outlining her family's history in the area and her desire to help the citizens of Presidio County, reinforcing the idea that there is a division between Presidio and Marfa didn't significantly help Ponton in the end, however, as he lost to Park 1,061-465 in Tuesday's Democratic primary election. No Republicans ran in the primary for any county race, so Park will take the seat beginning in January 2025. "Thank you, Presidio County, and I'm honored to become your county attorney," Park said after the election. She stressed that her primary goal will be uniting different areas of the county and not having any bias to anyone or area in the county. When the early vote tally was announced at 7 p.m. Tuesday, Park had a commanding lead of 808-395. Only a smattering of voters hit the polls on Election Day, so her supporters instantly knew Ponton couldn't make a comeback. Ponton did not return a request for comment. The differences in county commissioner vote totals weren't as stark. The push for county unity was especially pertinent to the Precinct 1 race that includes parts of Presidio and Marfa. Samuel Sanchez, who campaigned together with Park, came in first with 41% of the vote, with Deirdre Hisler 10 points behind at 31%. The two will head to a runoff on May 28th. Ruben Armendariz placed third with 28% of the vote. "It was a great election, and we made a lot of good friends along the way," Sanchez said. The Presidio resident and business owner also said he was behind county unity. "We wanted to get everybody together, no matter where they were from, and unite everyone on one big team." Hisler said she thinks that most of the attention in this primary was on the Park Ponton battle, so she's hoping voters can do a reset and think about who will make the best county commissioner. "I have a big mountain to climb," she said, citing her own lack of name recognition in South Presidio County. "Both my opponents have been out here a long time and have beautiful, large families, but I feel really good about my potential of winning. The focus for many of us was to get Blair in office. Now that that race is finished, people will focus more on qualifications for commissioner." In Precinct 3, the margins were also close. Tibercio Butch Acosta came out on top with 38% of the vote and will head to a runoff with Francisco Frankie Ortiz at 22%. Irma Carrasco received 21% of the vote, and incumbent Jose Luis Cabi Capesuela got 19%. Nancy Arevalo bested Norma Valenzuela 808 to 696 for county tax assessor collector, while Sheriff Danny Dominguez ran unopposed and garnered 1,056 votes. Incumbent Precinct Constable Steve Marquez also ran unopposed and received 530 votes, while in the Precinct 2 Constable race, Aiden Pugicovos defeated Rafael Acosta 658 to 171. Both county party chairs ran unopposed, with Ramon Rodriguez returning for the Democrats and Dan Dunlap for the Republicans. Brewster County. In the only contested Brewster County primary race, Democrat incumbent for Precinct 3 County Commissioner Ruben Ortega beat Joe Portillo 91 to 29. Sheriff Ronnie Dodson ran unopposed, as did tax assessor collector Sylvia Vega. Mary Bell Lockhart will return as County Democratic Party chair. On the Republican side, Marisol Skelton ran unopposed to win the county attorney seat of retiring Steve Houston. Incumbent Jim Westerman ran unopposed for Precinct 1 County Commissioner, and incumbent Flavio Rene Ibarra ran unopposed for Precinct 1 Constable. Monica McBride, also unopposed, will return as county Republican chair. Jeff Davis County. All the primary Fort Davis County races were in the Republican primary, so candidates will face no challengers from Democrats in the November general election. Victor Lopez came out on top of the four-way race to fill the seat of Sheriff Bill Kitts, who did not run. Lopez took 37% of the vote and will head to a runoff with C.W. Stephen, who took 33%. Clay Woods came in third with 25%, and Rick McIver came in fourth with 5%. In a highly watched contest for Precinct 3 County Commissioner, incumbent John Davis retained his seat over challenger Graydon Hicks, 76-33. Jody Adams ran unopposed in Precinct 1 and got 87 votes. Matt Blackman ran unopposed as county Republican chair, and unopposed Calvin Glover will remain county Democratic chair. Regional races. In the 83rd District Attorney race, Republican incumbent Ori White squeaked by Jesse Gonzalez Jr. by just 56 votes, 1,621 to 1,565. And in the 394th District Judge Republican contest, Monty Kimball came out on top over Bill Parham, 1,387 to 1,003. Franklin Graham's God Loves You tour makes a stop in Presidio by Sam Karras. Sam at BigBenSentinel.com. Presidio. Last Saturday afternoon, the world-famous evangelist Franklin Graham visited Presidio on the sixth leg of his God Loves You tour, following the U.S.-Mexico border from the Gulf of Mexico to the Pacific Coast. Presidio was by far the smallest city along the route, which started in Brownsville on February 24th and will wrap up in Chula Vista, California on Saturday. Around 300 people attended the late afternoon service. One volunteer said they had given out over 500 packages of devotionals, magazines, and donation forms throughout the day. The Presidio show came hot on the heels of stops in Eagle Pass and Del Rio, which have seen their own influx of celebrities in recent months. Governor Greg Abbott, former President Donald Trump, tech scion Elon Musk. The two sleepy border towns have become a political battleground, pitting the state and federal governments against each other and sparking headlines around the world. Despite the place and time, performing in some of the most embattled Texan border communities during a presidential primary, Graham insists that his event isn't political. Instead, Graham says his preaching targets all who have been impacted by the militarization on the border: law enforcement, local residents, migrants, and the churches, caring for all of the above. To the ordinary people caught in the fray, politics is poison and Jesus is the antidote. People on both sides of the border are overwhelmed. They're tired. They're discouraged, he told the Big Bend Sentinel. Ours is a spiritual message. We want people on the border to know that God has not forgotten them. The message is more literal in Presidio than most. From the window of Graham's tour bus, you could see La Sierrita, the mountain where the devil came down to earth. As the story goes, when God cast Satan out of heaven, he was sent to the Big Bend. Finding Alpine too lush and green, the devil set his sights on Ojinaga, which reminded him more of hell. Unlike Marfa, Presidio's little sister to the north, people like Beyonce rarely stop by to pose for photos and mingle with locals. Indie country darling Zach Bryan filmed at the Presidio International Drag Strip a few months ago, but Bryan is a birthday candle compared to Graham's Olympic torch. In a town where the largest gatherings in recent memory include a UFO festival and the crowning of an onion queen, Graham is the closest thing to a rock star Presidians have seen this side of the river in a long time. Between dual CEO roles as Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, founded by his father, and Samaritan's Purse, a worldwide relief ministry, Graham nets around $1 million a year. But his star power drives donations. His website estimates that he's preached to over 570,000 people since he began regularly touring the country in 2016. If Graham is a rock star, God Loves You is his borderlands Burning Man. In a matter of hours, a team of forklifts and death-defying audio techs transformed the small-town high school stadium into a state-of-the-art sound stage, with speakers stacked two stories high and jumbotron screens perched strategically for all to see. For the most part, the service stayed true to its apolitical roots. In contrast with recent Republican messaging on the influx of migrants on the border, ground zero for an invasion of criminals from a failed narco state incapable of policing itself, not a single critical word was spoken of immigrants or of the United States' southern neighbor. Leading the congregation in songs that flipped between English and Spanish, musician Marcus Witt insisted that the bilingual service was a rehearsal for the afterlife. "God loves Mexico," he said. "We'll sing in Spanish in heaven." Graham's offstage relationship with politics is more complex. His father, Billy Graham, arguably the most influential evangelical Christian of all time, counseled every American president from Harry Truman to Barack Obama. The elder Graham was a staunch proponent of the civil rights movement and a supporter of Martin Luther King, Jr. "Evangelicals can't be closely identified with any particular party or person," Graham declared in 1981. "We have to stand in the middle to preach to all the people, right and left." Of course, the reality was more complex. Graham was fervently anti-communist and opposed the candidacy of John F. Kennedy on the grounds that he was Catholic. He had particularly knotty relationships with Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan that made some observers question his impartiality. "I haven't been faithful to my own advice in the past. I will in the future," he said. His son has struggled to walk the same line. In the 2016 and 2020 elections, the younger Graham stumped for Trump. He announced last year that he would not endorse Trump in the 2024 primaries, but showed support in other ways, expressing displeasure when E. Jean Carroll, who accused the former president of sexually assaulting her, won an $83.3 million settlement. "Simply put, Democrats are using the system and changing the law," he tweeted. On immigration, Graham's views hit a few Republican talking points, chief among them that federal immigration authorities are being hamstrung by an ineffective Biden administration. But his rhetoric lacks some of the racial dog whistles employed by the more extreme end of the bell curve. "Some people think everybody coming across as a bad person," he told the Sentinel. "I don't blame the people coming in, but smugglers take advantage of them and steal their money, and you hear these horrible stories, especially of things that have happened to women." Graham does not want to see the border shut down. He doesn't want people to give up their languages and culture. He'd also like to see the economy bolstered by an easier and more efficient guest worker program. In 2019, Samaritan's Purse, the relief nonprofit he leads, toured Texas along the Rio Grande, connecting asylum seekers with temporary housing and passing out hygiene kits and diapers. "People don't understand the border, so I'm going to shed a little light and try to share God's love with as many people as I can," he said. To a secular audience, Graham's messaging might seem wildly political. In the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association's magazine, Decision, passed out by volunteers in green and blue vests at the event, the issues fall squarely on the right-hand side of the aisle. The magazine features a Q&A with former Vice President Mike Pence and makes a point to condemn anti-Zionism and woke culture. Another article praises teachers fired for refusing to use students' preferred gender pronouns and suggests conversion therapy might reduce the rate of suicide among LGBTQ people. During his sermon, Graham addressed gender and sexuality more simply and explicitly. The message boomed from the speakers so loud that the sound seemed to echo between the Sierrita and the Sand Hills. No one in town could avoid the message. "God made sex," he reminded the crowd. "But sex has to be used the way God intended, in a marriage relationship between a man and a woman." Regardless of political bent, there is no fire and brimstone. Graham's ultimate message is that anyone who turns their life over to Jesus can be forgiven for even the most serious spiritual offenses. I'm sure that some of you out there tonight have had an abortion, and it's bothered you every day since, he said. God will forgive you tonight. He'll take that guilt, he'll take that shame, and he'll set you free. At the end of the sermon, Graham invited anyone seeking salvation to come forward and receive a blessing of absolution. Nearly half the audience approached the stage, the sinners ranging in age from those wheeled in strollers to those bent over walkers. Some wept, some knelt, some raised their hands to the sky. The collective feeling of relief was palpable, coinciding with a sunset that broke the heat of an unseasonably warm afternoon. When the prayer was over, Graham left the stage and the musicians returned, playing upbeat music to temper the heaviness. Attendees danced it all off, drones whizzing overhead and cameras flashing in the background. The giant screens encouraged those who had been saved to text a hotline. A message in Spanish revealed that God also uses WhatsApp. Throughout the event, he told the audience that God loves Presidio, and so does he, ever since he first rode through the Big Bend on a motorcycle 5 years ago. There's something about the beauty of the desert along with the mountains, he told the Sentinel. What I like about the border here is that it doesn't have fences and barbed wire. It's like what it used to be. Photo by Hannah Gentiles for the Big Bend Sentinel. Those attending Franklin Graham's God Loves You Frontera tour, held at the Manuel O. Hernandez Memorial Stadium in Presidio on Saturday, sat on the football field for the event, which included musical guests and a sermon by Franklin Graham, seen on the stage here.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, March 7th, 2024. County approves bids, adds streets to CTIF grant list. The Pecos County Commissioners Court on February 26th approved a list of items on its agenda during the regular commission meeting. The court approved a revision to the Economic Development Agreement for 2024. The original budget listed the EDC would receive $100,000, but it received $200,000 last year, and that has not changed for this year. And the court agreed to pay a price increase for two ambulances. The second chassis had an original price of $64,000, but the price increased to $66,000. And the first chassis, originally cost $54,000, now costs $66,000. According to a letter from Pablo Cantu of Sterling McCall Ford, from where the county purchased the ambulance chassis, the increase stems from pandemic-related challenges causing delays in processing orders, plant constraints, supply chain disruptions, part availability issues, and worker shortages temporarily halting assembly plants. It's all because of the pandemic, said Joe Schuster. They got behind everything, on everything, but they're scheduled to replace two of our ambulances, which are still running today. Knock on wood, they're still running. The new ambulances are expected this fall. Schuster said that makes three new ambulances, which is not necessarily good because that makes three with the same mileage, and the county would rather have them spread out over a year apart. The court approved tax refund applications for Douglas Collins and Tango Lima LLC. The court voted to allow the Iran Library to apply for an Amazon credit card for book purchases. The books that the library needs are only available through Amazon. They're cheaper through Amazon, according to Schuster. We did this last year for the library. The court voted to allow Precinct 1 to utilize the difference for a belly dump trailer purchase from Area Trailer Sales and Rental. It was budgeted at $47,000, and that trailer just cost $43,000. I'd like to keep the $4,000 in my budget. The court allowed Sheriff Pickens to purchase a new dishwasher for the county jail to be paid with budgeted funds. The court approved a request from Precinct 3 for an increase in jury funds because of an upcoming trial. They allowed Precinct 2 to purchase an electric start generator, trash pump, air compressor, pressure washer, and generator from TITX at a total of $6,000 to be paid with budgeted funds. Approved a release for funds for a concrete header and wings for Sand Road Bridge repairs. Approved a lease service agreement between AgriLife Extension and Apertex due to Southwest Security Alarm Systems transitioning to Apertex. They added 46th, 47th, and 48th lanes in Precinct 1 to the Pecos County grant project. The money is coming from Precinct 2 money that they're not going to use. They approved USDA Predator Control Report. Concho Aviation hunted at Odom Ranch, Mitchell Ranch, Belding Farms, Williams Farms, and Hammond Ranch and took 36 coyotes and 159 bobcats. Perkins reelected sheriff in the Republican primary. Super Tuesday primary election went pretty much as expected, with Trump winning the Republican primary in a landslide and Biden taking the Democratic primary. Locally, several elections were decided. Perkins won the Republican primary for Pecos County Sheriff. County Commissioner Francisco Ramirez had the most votes in the Republican primary with 246 to 117 over Andy Rivera. On the Democratic ballot, incumbent Tom Chapman found himself in a battle with Mario Juarez, garnering 98 votes to Juarez's 70. In the race for 83rd District Attorney, Ori White retained his seat, edging Jesse Gonzalez, and Stephen Dodd unseated incumbent Lori English. In federal and state races on the Republican ballot, Ted Cruz garnered 84% of the vote. Tony Gonzalez won the Republican nomination for House with 56%. Christy Craddock won the Railroad Commissioner nomination. Brian Walker won Supreme Court Justice. David Schenck won over Presiding Judge, Criminal Court of Appeals, and will face Democrat Holly Taylor. Gina Parker won the judge and will face Democrat Nancy Mulder. Michelle Slaughter won the Court of Criminal Appeals and will face Chika Anyayam. Wes Verdell won over Hatch Smith. Democrat ballot Roland Gutierrez won the race for U.S. Senator. Lyman won the Democratic nod for Representative. Catherine Colbert for Railroad Commissioner. And Cesar Blanco was unopposed for a District 29 seat. For Stockton HOSA inducts new officers. The future of healthcare services in Pecos County and beyond is a bright one, thanks to the high school's Health Occupational Students of America chapter. The chapter is part of the Career and Technology Program and is in just its second year of existence. The chapter held an induction ceremony for this year's officers, February 27th. Career and technical student organizations play an integral part in the students' career and technical education, said Assistant Superintendent Roy Alvarado. CTSOs enrich the learning that starts in the classroom, builds strong partnerships between industries and future employees, and so provide future career experiences for our students, and they carry on into their careers and into the community. The program is student-led and designed to develop future leaders for the healthcare system. The new officers for this year include parliamentarian Isabella Chavez, reporter Adriana Trevino, historian Elisa Rangel, secretary Alexa Gonzalez, treasurer Arian Hernandez, vice president Alessandra Jackson, and president Lori Bell Urbano. Tarpley congratulated the students for their commitment and work as part of HOSA. It's important, only the second year for Fort Stockton to have a chapter, so you are on the ground floor building for the future. The things that you do remainder of this year are going to inspire those next year to want to do things better and greater. So take it seriously. We're behind you, and we thank you for your commitment. Dear Editor, world conditions prior to January 2021, life was better due to fewer wars, less crime, higher life expectancy, lower child deaths, less climate-related deaths, less poverty, a trust in medicine, and a trust in government, by most, anyway. The U.S. has since become a laughingstock where before it was respected and or feared around the world. We now have major wars in Europe and the Middle East. The hatred of Jews has been increased, mimicking that of the 1930s and 40s, and 10 million illegal migrants have been allowed to run free in the USA, inducing crime that includes the rape and murder of women and children. Needless face masks, vaccines, and lockdowns for U.S. and other citizens, but not illegal migrants, were forced on people, causing much damage and distrust in medicine that now exists among many, and rightly so, with the problems caused by the so-called vaccines, to include death. Let's not forget the suppression of other proven treatments for viral infections. Billions of U.S. dollars are printed and distributed, creating historical inflation, causing many to become poorer. Sadly, when America becomes poorer, often do other places around the world. What changed in January 2021? It was the people put in charge of federal, state, and local governments in America. May God help us put an end to their intentional madness. Signed, James LeBlanc, Fort Davis. Dear Editor, first let me make clear, I think that sports has a place in our school. Physical activity and the soft skills of teamwork, responsibility and good character building are useful to include in education as a whole. However, on average, parents, our business community, our media, and our school administration emphasize sports and sports results at the expense of academic achievement. The Fort Stockton School District is rated very low in the state academic testing results. This directly reflects the prioritization of all stakeholders involved. Our children's academic performance is a reflection of the total effort and attention from all these stakeholders. At home, our children need an environment without drama and conducive to high achievement in school. Our business and property tax stakeholders need to promote and subsidize academic excellence the same way they promote school sports. Our media should also be given at least equal coverage to academia as they give sports. Lastly, our school administration needs to prioritize developing a richer academic curriculum and facilitating improvement in our children's performance over an obsession on bond projects. Some random examples of questionable priorities include the budget for sports supplies is in an order of magnitude larger than the budget for science lab experiments. We no longer have a calculus teacher. Our school only had 4 kids compete at UIL academic competition. The tiny community of Imperial had far more. I would be very much surprised if many more examples of academic short shrift our kids encounter. It is a very competitive world out there. In all my working career, I've had math, science, reading comprehension, and other academic testing many times. It made a difference in getting a job or a promotion or certification doing well on this academic testing. Few in future career life will care how many baskets or blocks or points you made in sports. We can foster a better academic education here. All we have to do is make it a priority. It can give our kids a lifetime of advantage. Signed, Al Haney, Fort Stockton.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahan News for Thursday, February 29th. Dearman arrested for possessing hundreds of child porn images. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A 37-year-old Monahans man, Dustin Reed Dearman, of 1402 West 1A Street, was arrested last Wednesday after officers with the Texas Department of Public Safety Midland Criminal Investigation Division conducted a search at his residence. Sergeant Stephen Blanco, Texas DPS Media Communications Officer, said, quote, Midland CID officers conducted a search on February 21st at Dearman's home and were looking for electronic devices which contained material related to child pornography. Blanco said images of child pornography were found on both Dearman's computer and phone, and both electronic devices were seized as evidence. It isn't clear the exact number of images, digital recordings were found on the electronic devices, but Blanco said, quote, the count was in between 100 to 500. This is an ongoing investigation, but based on evidence found during execution of the warrant, an arrest was obtained, he added. The warrant was signed by a judge out of Midland. Dearman was subsequently booked and taken to the Ward County Jail and charged with one count of possession of child pornography, a second-degree felony. Because the case is still under investigation, it was not clear if Dearman could face additional charges. Bond was set at $15,000, and Dearman was released after posting the bond. This story will be updated as information becomes available. If convicted, Dearman is facing a prison term of 2 to 20 years confinement in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice and or a fine up to $10,000. Contract renewed for air ambulance service by commissioners. The story was written by Jan Cranfill. The Ward County commissioners met for a perfunctory regular biweekly meeting on Monday morning at the Ward County Courthouse. The short agenda was breezed through by Precinct 4 Commissioner Eddie Nelms, who presided over the meeting in the absence of Ward County Judge Greg Holley. The commissioners renewed the air ambulance service with Air Medcare for 2024. Cost of the agreement for the coming year, which will run from April 2024 until April 2025, will be $68,620. Any individual who resides within the boundaries of Ward County when transported for medical necessity by MedTrans Incorporated or any Air Medcare network provider will be covered. Transport must be from a pickup location in Ward County. For the benefit of residents in the western part of the county, individuals will be picked up from Reeves County Hospital in Pecos. Additional coverage is available for county residents to cover individuals and families that will provide transport for medically necessary anywhere serviced by AirMed Care. Cost for the optional coverage is $55 for families and $45 for seniors over the age of 60. The company will bill the covered individual's insurance directly without additional cost to the individual. If the covered individual transported does not have health insurance at the time of transport, MedTrans will bill the covered individual at the Medicare allowable rate for the transport. Quote, this is one of the best things we do for our citizens, Nem said. In other contract renewals, the court approved a radio tower lease agreement with Industrial Communications. The agreement is for five-year rental intervals at the amount of $500 per month. The tower is for the radio communications for the Sheriff's Department, Monahan's Fire Department, and Ward County EMS. The commissioners approved paying the county bills, which included postage total $1,800, indigent legal care for $1,200, vehicle maintenance and fuel for the Sheriff's Department, amount $12,285, jail groceries totaling $6,900, state prisoner expense for $17,500, ward memorial indigent care amount $30,400, Coliseum and arena repairs and maintenance totaling $4,700, Ward County golf course improvements amounting to $12,900. In other regular business, the commissioners approved the past meeting's minutes, the county and hospital budget amendments, the officer's report, the hospital financial report, the county treasurer's report, as well as the last meeting's minutes. Present for the meeting were Precinct 2 Commissioner Larry Hanna, Precinct 3 Commissioner Dexter Nichols, and Precinct 4 Commissioner Eddie Nelms. Precinct 1 Commissioner Tino Sanchez and Judge Greg Holly were absent from the meeting. The next regularly scheduled Commissioner's Court will be held on Monday, March 11th at 9:30 a.m. in the Ward County Courthouse, 400 South Allen Street. Individuals who would like to address the court to ask questions or inform the commissioners of problems in their precinct or ward county can call Judge Greg Holly at 432-943-3209, discuss their question or concern, and ask to be placed on the agenda for the next commissioners' meeting. Child Abuse Awareness Month proclaimed. Council appoints Beard to MEDC Board. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. City Council members met for a regular meeting on Tuesday, and after calling the meeting to order and establishing a quorum, Councilmember Jeppy Wilson led the group in prayer, where he asked God for guidance in securing an overpass to the north side of Monahans, saying, quote, "In due time, can we at least have an overpass to go to the north side? It is so important. Those wonderful folks on the north side are just as important as those on the south side, and everyone here today would agree. We need that, Father, and you see it better than we do." End quote. Once the meeting got underway, the council considered approving previous minutes and the January's consent items, which included accounts payable, building permits, municipal court's monthly report, animal control officer's report, a report for the Roy Hurd Memorial Airport, MEDC minutes and financial report, monthly fund balance, and city revenue and expenditure comparison summary report. All reports were approved as submitted. In street closings, the council approved closing East 12th and East 13th Street between Stewart Avenue and East Monahans Parkway for the Monahans Street Jam on Saturday, April 6th, and closing 5th Street between South Allen and South Calvin Streets on April 27th for Harmony Homes Party in the Park. In proclamations, Mayor Adam Steen proclaimed April as Child Abuse Awareness Month. April is National Child Abuse Prevention Month, and Harmony Home Children's Advocacy Center is raising awareness of the need and help to end child abuse and neglect through supporting children and their families. Harmony Home has been an advocacy center for abused children since 1993 and is one of 72 in Texas. Harmony Home works with children who have been physically, sexually, or emotionally abused, as well as all the agencies, law enforcement, child protective services, CASA, hospitals, county and district attorney's offices involved with an investigation. In addition to Ward County, Harmony Home also serves 17 other counties in the region, and according to local statistics, Ward County has the highest percentage of reported child abuse cases. Quote, "It is a statistic we definitely are not proud of, but everyone needs to be aware of," Steen said. In other business, the council took notice of code enforcement report regarding 4 properties in violation of city code for either trash, weeds, items in the alleyway, and or dangerous structures. Quote, "The good news is since we delivered your packets last week, 6 of the owners got their properties back into compliance, and so there are only 4 remaining on the list who did not comply," Thee told the council members. This will allow code enforcement to follow up with a final notice and possibly move forward with court action if needed. Those reported to be still in violation are 600 South Leon, owned by Monahan's Affordable Homes, 401 South Kenneth, owned by Pedro and Valerie Dominguez, 405 North Alice, owned by Elizabeth Garcia, and 1006 West 2nd Street, owned by Gonzalo and Hilda Meza. Once a second notice is issued, the property owner has 10 days to comply, or the case could be turned over to Monahan's Municipal Court for further action. At the end of the first council meeting, the council convened an executive session to discuss personnel matters involving Monahan's Economic Development Corporation Board appointment for the unexpired term of member Hal Upchurch, who resigned in January. Upchurch was reappointed to the board for another 3-year term, October 2023, and the unexpired term will end in September 2026. After reconvening an open session, Thies said, quote, "The council approved the appointment of Chad Beard to the MEDC board," end quote. The city council meets every second and fourth Tuesday of the month at 3 p.m. Anyone wanting to address the city council on the topics addressed in this story or any other topic may do so by asking to be added to the meeting agenda in the city secretary's office located inside City Hall, or by appearing at the meeting during the public comment section of the meeting, which is on every agenda. The next city council meeting will be held at 3 p.m. on Tuesday, March 12th, in the council chambers at City Hall, 112 West 2nd Street. Gardea finishes 7th at Regional Spelling Bee. Winner of the Parkway School-wide Spelling Bee, Yadley Gardea, competed in the Midland Reporter-Telegram Regional Spelling Bee on Saturday, February 24th, at the Allison Fine Arts Building at Midland College. Gardea finished in 7th place at the Spelling Bee, making it to the 4th round of the Bee. Words she spelled correctly were fashionista, editorial, and way. Gardea missed the word beguile. 35 spellers from Andrews, Big Spring, Greenwood, Midland, and Monahans competed in the Spelling Bee for the opportunity to represent the region at the Scripps National Spelling Bee, which will be held in Washington, D.C. from May 28th through 30th. Gray gets 8 years for aggravated robbery. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Monahans woman has been sentenced to serve 8 years in prison after pleading guilty to attempting to rob the Pilot truck stop with a knife in December 2022. Leanne Carol Gray appeared in front of 143rd District Judge Mike Swanson on February 20th, and after waiving her right to a jury trial, Gray accepted a plea agreement and entered a guilty plea to one count of aggravated robbery, a first-degree felony. According to Monahans Police Department Chief of Police Christopher Quintana, quote, "On December 13th, officers responded to the Pilot truck stop located at 101 South Loop 464 in reference to a robbery in progress. Once on scene, officers detained a female inside the store who matched the description to the suspect, who was later identified as Gray, in handcuffs. Officers spoke to the store clerk, Esther Resendez, who told them the female they had in cuffs demanded money from the store while displaying a knife and saying she needed money. Gray dropped the knife prior to police arrival and was subsequently arrested and charged. Gray was indicted on the charge on April 27, 2023. She was further ordered to pay a fine of $1,500. Randall W. Reynolds served as attorney for the state on the case.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.